Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here, returning with our guest Schwinny Poo, who you might know from Posting and Toasting or the Posting and Toasting Show or at Schwinny Poo on Twitter. And we are finishing our discussion of the top five moments of the Knicks season, breaking down our top two moments.
Yeah, we talk about big game for RJ Barrett that the more we get into realize was just a big game for the Knicks in general. And then we finish up by breaking down, I won't even spoil it. I'll just say probably the two games that made Knicks fans the happiest and people who didn't like some of my opinions on the podcast last year the happiest. I'll say no more because I think most of you will have gotten it. Next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
This is all rebound, back up off the glass. It's good. RJ Barrett brings the Knicks to the
rim. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam across the lane. Knox foul from behind. Count it and one to Trier. Trier drives. Oh, oh,
becomes infectious. Becomes infectious.
Well, you mentioned it a minute ago. I think that's a good note to end on for those games. You mentioned just a second ago the Houston game, which came towards the end of the season. I guess we sort of dubbed this one the Leon Rose era game. It was the first game after Rose was announced. He was announced as the new president of basketball operations that morning officially. Despite that news breaking almost a month prior, he had to get out of all of his commitments as an agent and all that stuff before taking the job officially with the Knicks. So it was his first day technically on the job. He sat, with Scott Perry near the court. They took in the whole game together. Rose seemed very happy with what happened on the court because the Knicks on March 2nd won against Houston at home. 125 to 123, which was made particularly impressive by the fact that Houston was playing some pretty hot basketball.
They had just beaten the Celtics in like that primetime Saturday night game.
Yeah, and they were, for the prior month or two before that, they were playing fantastic, and they had been ever since they sort of embraced the whole like super small ball thing where they had PJ Tucker at center and Robert Covington.
Very, very sustainable. Very sustainable brand of ball.
Yeah, nobody would get beat up at all against a team with bigger players. But the Knicks sort of broke that that whole thing open as far as, can the Rockets play small? The Knicks, like, if we get a playoffs or if we had gotten a playoffs like normal, I think there's a chance that people might have looked back at this game a little bit as sort of a blueprint of how to beat Houston. Granted, like Westbrook,
I think it was because after that game, I think the Rockets, they had like a really bad stretch after that game, and it was like, I think teams would have figured it out beforehand, but the Knicks happened to be the one that did. But it's just like, yeah, you don't really need to. If PJ Tucker's gonna beat you, live with that, and like. And then you just beat the shit out of them inside because that's what the Knicks did. They just beat the shit out of them inside.
That was actually the first of a four-game losing streak for them that started, and they would wind up winning their final game before the season got canceled against or suspended, quote unquote, still against Minnesota. But they went on a four-game losing streak starting with this game against the Knicks, and the Knicks it was great. They came out, they blitzed Houston, and they went up by I forget what their biggest lead was, but it was,
I think, 21 at one point.
I was just say it was around 20 points. It was a very big lead, and they just played great basketball, and they got great contributions from their younger players. To your point about the last game with RJ and Butler, he went head to head with Harden in this game and like beat him down. It was, he had 27 points, 10 of 18 shooting, shot 3 of 8 from 3, which isn't perfect, but is certainly good.
He shoots 3 of 8 every night. We're going to be really happy with RJ Barrett. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's 38%, 37.5%. So, that's more than enough, And 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He took on lot of ball handling in this game. Frank Ntilikina played almost 30 minutes and had 11 points, 4 assists. He played about 10 minutes more than Elfrid Payton, which was great. Mitchell Robinson looked like a man among boys for large portions of the game. Played almost 24 and a half minutes himself.
He had foul trouble in this game, right? Didn't he foul out?
No. Nope. 12 points, 13 rebounds, only one foul. But he got taken out of points, I think, just to sort of combat the Rockets going super small, I think. And, you know, so Mitch – and there was, like, one stretch. I'm trying to remember who was in lieu of Mitch being in. But there was one stretch where one unit was working really, really well for a stretch in, like, the third and fourth quarter. But then – that unit sort of petered out, and then they put Mitch in like a little too late, and like the momentum was kind of already gone. And that's why Houston wound up making this fake comeback, almost came back and took the game from the Knicks, but ultimately wound up losing by two down the stretch. I'll throw it, Gavin, why don't you go first on this one, I guess. What were your memories of this game? I mean, I remember personally just being like, wow, this is great. I mean, Houston was a great freaking team. Like, they were cruising towards the top four seed in the West, probably. And the Knicks, you know, for the better part of this game until the very end when they almost coughed it up, just, you know, really had Houston handled.
First of all, can you guys believe this game was a month and a half ago? I thought this was like a year ago.
Yeah, it feels so like a long ago.
It feels like a different lifetime, but yeah, Alex, I mean, to your point, I mean, I think I said, I remember the pod we did that night, and I thought going into that game, I mean, to Schwinn's argument, who knows how sustainable it was, but they were playing as well or better than any other team in the NBA. And again, it was just very similar to the Heat game. Just one of those moments for RJ Barrett that, I was pretty critical of him for large portions of the season, I think with some good reason, but it gives you an idea of why he's a top three pick. And I think almost more so than his potential on the court, why he's a little bit of, I think, a cultural touchstone for this team. And his whole attitude is exactly what I want the Knicks to build around, because the dude is just a badass. He's a teenager going up against the best scorer in the NBA. We noted at the time, I mean, just for how they were playing, maybe the best team in the NBA. And because he was actually empowered and got to touch the ball early, and maybe that was the Leon Rose effect, or maybe it was just a coincidence, but the fact that, like, he was actually allowed to get going and run the offense, like, he was just kicking ass. And it was a little bit different than the game against the Heat, because this wasn't Duncan Robinson and Tyler Herro, who are two guys who were relatively close to his age, but also just skinny and who both look a lot like me. This was like PJ Tucker and Robert Covington, and even someone like Daniel House, who's just bigger than him. Like, he had a play, I think it was in the third quarter, where he just barrels straight into the house, sort of spins around and throws in an and one jump hook. He looked, ironically enough, like a prime Hakeem Olajuwon for those two or three seconds. And then he had this other just demolition of Austin Rivers, where it was something you don't really see, ironically, outside of Houston, you don't see in the NBA very often anymore, where a guy's just allowed to isolate for like 7 or 8 seconds at a time. But he had a little half spin that Rivers like kept up with him, and RJ just sort of eyed him, and then his like hesitation, hop step to the basket, and totally froze Rivers on the initial stop and start. And I mean, Austin Rivers, I mean, for as much as he gets made fun of, like, really good defender at this point in his career. So, this wasn't something that RJ did on a game-to-game basis, but gave you an idea when he's empowered, when he's allowed to have the ball in his hands, just the force that he is as a teenager, and how exciting that is going forward. And just the emotional aspect of it, I think, can't be underrated, because the guy didn't play with a lick of fear.
You know, I think also this was the game where Frank...
This is a Spike Lee game, too.
Oh, yeah, this was the Spike. I wasn't even thinking about that. Yeah, this was the Spike Lee game. And it was also, speaking of Austin Rivers, it just jogged my memory that this was the same game, too, I believe, where Frank crossed Austin Rivers, like, into next year and had, like, a great dribble move on him that, like, I don't remember if it put him on his butt or not, but it he crossed him up really good. I remember that much. Yeah, Schwinn, what were your memories of this Leon Rose era game. Let's leave the spike stuff at the door though, because let's leave the spike stuff at the employee entrance, because I don't feel like rehashing all that bullshit again.
Yeah, fuck Spike Lee. And what are my memories? My memories are that it was weird. It was not weird. It was like, it was one of those games that you could just tell the Garden was kind of like into it from the beginning. Maybe it was because it's Russ and Harden, and it was Rose's first night, but it was very like, from tip, it felt like a pretty electric game, and obviously it helped that the Knicks, they got down early, like 9-1 or something like that, but then they pretty quickly came back into the game and took the lead and just kind of went from there. Frank had a nice little stretch. He even tried to, like, pull a Harden on Harden at one point in the second half, but just missed the jumper. I think
that was great.
Yeah, I think the entire Garden would have, like, exploded if he had actually hit that shot. But he also, like, he did something that he doesn't do a lot. Like, he had a possession at the end of the first half where, like, he literally just blew by Robert Covington in ISO and laid it in. Like, I forgetting the fact that it's Robert Covington, who is, you know, one of the elite perimeter defenders and just overall defenders in the league, but, like, for him to just do that in an isolation situation is fucking ridiculous. He also had a obsession where he used it. For someone as big as he is, he, like, rarely is, and how physical he is defensively, like, how good he is at using his body defensively, he's like, terrible at using his body on offense. But he did on this one possession in the second half against Austin Rivers, where he just, like, basically bodied him, cleared him off, Rivers went flying, and Frank just, like, took a jumper and canned it. So, like, stuff like that sticks out. Obviously, Mitch just coming in and being half a foot taller than everybody else and him just, like, realizing that and dunking everything was pretty awesome. But, I mean, really what stood out to me was just the last sequence. So, like, RJ drives on PJ Tucker, and, like, PJ Tucker is a guy who has played a lot of small ball five, like, super strong, has no fear of anybody, is able to out physical a ton of guys in the NBA. And RJ just, like, drove at him and literally, like, you know, a lot of times you'll see guys separate and, like, push off and extend their arm and, like, a full extension. And if you watch that drive, like, RJ doesn't really extend. He just, like, uses his shoulder and completely just wipes PJ Tucker the fuck out. Just absolutely wipes him out. Like, he falls into the crowd and lays it in. And, like, seeing that is ridiculous considering RJ Barrett is 19. So it's like, I know he's already very developed, but he's 19. So the odds are, like, he's going to have a chance to develop more mass. And just, like, that, you know, like, is there a chance he ends up being, like, and this is not to be taken as the level of player, but, like, is there a chance he could be, like, Kawhi physically? Like, that type of physical, just absolute beast, or even Iguodala or something like that. Like, it's possible. He's really young and he's already pretty ripped to that point. So that was awesome. And then, like, that final sequence that Houston had where Russ went at Frank. I mean, that was such bullshit too, because, like, so RJ makes that shot to put them up three. Houston comes down and Frank, he strips Russ like it's clean, like completely 100% clean. You can watch that replay from now until whenever, and you will not see him get a finger laid on him. And that would have been game over, right? Because Knicks would get the ball, free throws, whatever. But, like, yeah, they call a foul. Russ makes his two. Then I think Randall split a pair for us why the hell he's in a position to take free throws in that situation. I don't know. But yeah, he splits Barrett, and then, you know, Frank does a really good job on Russ on the final possession of the game, like gets him into taking a pull-up fading like 15-18 footer, misses it, Knicks win, like pretty much just the best game of the season in a lot of, in terms of just like the quality of victory and three of your young players showing out at high level against elite opposition in terms of at least the stars on the other team. And on top of that, it was just like I said, the Garden was electric. And I think after the game, like, they interviewed RJ and he was just like, oh yeah, like, you know, Frank just like took the challenge to defend, like he was just gassing up Frank and stuff like that. Makes you feel good when you only win 21 games for the season. So yeah, it was just, it was fun. It was nice to see. And obviously the fact that, you know, the three, I think most Knicks fans that aren't fucking idiots would agree, like the three young players in the team that look like genuine NBA players currently to varying degrees, all showed out, and you could see how they'd fit together and like how enticing that could be in some theoretical future where we don't do anything stupid and we actually develop these guys.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, to the point that I made when we were talking about the Heat game, it wasn't necessarily that the Rockets just had an off night. Like, just you go back and watch the highlights of the second half of this game. Both teams were playing, I never thought I'd say this about the Knicks this season, but really high-level basketball. Like, there was a sequence where RJ drew a triple team and just set up a tic-tac-toe passing sequence to Taj Gibson for a dunk. The Rockets, I think leveraging the fact that no one on the Knicks, outside of Frank, occasionally had any kind of chance against Russell Westbrook, just kept creating, like, these odd-man rush situations, to use a hockey analogy, where the Knicks were just constantly scrambling, and the Knicks kind of sensing that they could win this game and that it could be arguably their win of the year, were going all out trying to catch up, and with guys like Mitchell Robinson and Kevin Knox, they'd come close, but someone like Eric Gordon would pump fake them out of their shoes and still hit a three. Russ had that monster dunk with like 90 seconds left in transition. The Rockets were actually down, but I forgot this, they were down by 9 with 4 minutes and 20 seconds left, and they come all the way back down the end, and you just, it was one of those games where you felt like if it went a minute longer, the Rockets would have overtaken the Knicks, but the Knicks gave themselves just enough of a cushion to bleed out the clock. And final note, a quick shout out to Wayne Ellington, because I totally forgot this was the game where he hit like 4 threes in a row in the second quarter, and one of them was, it's kind of a small play, but it was just so elegant. Like, Frank had this little reverse pivot, no-look dribble handoff to Ellington. And I don't know about you guys, but one of my favorite things in the NBA is when, like, a standstill shooter gets hot. Like, not someone like Steph Curry who can create their own shot, but a Kyle Korver or Wayne Ellington, even a Reggie Bullock on the right night. When someone like that hits 4 or 5 threes, and it just becomes sort of like this cat and mouse game where the only question is, can the defender catch up with the guy? Because they know he's going to get the ball. Like, once he's made 3 in a row, you know he's getting the ball. You know he's not beating you off the dribble. You know if he pump fakes, he's not driving in and dunking on someone. So you can go all out to stop him. But when the shooter's still able to get it off and just hit an off-balance, ridiculous three, maybe that's because how I play basketball, because I just can't move at all. I really fuck with that. But those moments are just the best for me. So shout out to my friends.
Yeah, and like the thing with Wayne, and I'm pretty sure I've said this like on the podcast, I've tweeted it, but like one of the things that was super annoying with Ellington and how Fizz used him and how Fizz like in general used shooters was like these guys need shooters go through slumps. All shooters, literally every fucking shooter that has ever, no matter how good you are, these guys will have slumps. And like when shooters slump, it sucks. It really sucks because like their entire value obviously is hitting shots and they're not hitting any shots. So like Ellington had a terrible stretch to start the season. And what happened is he just fell out of the rotations, or like everybody's like, this guy, like he can't hit shots. Like he doesn't hit shots anymore. And it's like, no, like that's just normal. Like that's a stretch of the, like, every shooter is going to have a stretch of the season like that. Maybe even multiple stretches of the season like that. I don't think people remember this with J.R. Smith, but like J.R. Smith had a season where he had shot like 40% for three from the Knicks. But for the first 3 months of that season, he couldn't hit shit. Like, that's just how it works. And that was always a thing with Ellington is like, I think he had taken like 80 threes at one point, like more, maybe less, the heck, halfway through the season. And people are bitching about his percentage. And I'm like, you know, if he made like 8 more threes, he'd be shooting 40%. Like, that's really the margins you're talking about there. So to me, it was just like, play him more minutes. He's going to have these weird ass, like, not weird, but like these odd games where he makes like 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8 threes, right? Like, he did that in Miami. Like, why would any, he's not that old. I think he's only like 31. He's not like at the point where you might expect him to just fall off a cliff, right? It was not too surprising to me that towards the end of the season, he did come along. Unfortunate for us, it didn't happen. He didn't catch fire before like the trade deadline, because I do think a team would trade for him if he had a hot streak beforehand. Whereas in what unfolded, I think they were hoping the Knicks would just buy him out so they could pick him up for nothing. But you know, different story anyway. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I forgot that Wayne actually had like kind of a huge role in our in our victory. But you know, good for him. Like people really like ragged on that signing, probably because of how he was used and he didn't shoot well for a while. But like, I still don't really have a problem with that. I think it made sense to sign a wing shooter. It's not his fault that like for some reason we have this steadfast belief that we cannot play small and have multiple shooters on the floor at the same time. So between him, Dotson, Bullock, they all just kind of cannibalized each other's minutes.
Yep. So I think we can safely move to our final game here, because we've spent a lot of time on this Houston one. But our final game is not actually one game. It's two games.
Whoa.
Hello. It is, fun fact, David Fizdale won 4 games this season with the New York Knicks, going 4-18 before getting canned. 2 of those wins, 50% of the wins that he managed to get this year, were against the Dallas Mavericks, and those 2 games are our top moment of the whole season. Pretty obvious reasons, I think, why these were the most anticipated games and then why they ended up becoming our best of the season. Obviously, Kristaps Porzingis, Gavin's favorite player, was was traded to the Mavericks last year and hadn't suited up with them before this year because he was rehabbing the torn ACL. He came back to start the year, and both these games were pretty early on in the season. It was the Knicks' 9th game and the Mavs' 8th game, the first one. And then the second one was just a week later, or not even quite a week later.
6 days after.
Yeah, 6 days. So they played both these in very close proximity to one another.
Yeah, it was a Friday, and then there was the Thursday national game.
Yeah, the Thursday game was the one where we did the meetup for it, which made it that much better. Which, by the way, if anybody, once everything calms down, of course, and life sort of goes back to normal, if we do meetups, definitely come by sometime. Because this one was one of those that really illustrated why those can be so fun. So, you know, first game, Knicks win 106-102 on the road. Big moment late was Julius Randle gets a rebound that ultimately sort of seals it and allows him to take some free throws and can the game. And then the second one, Marcus Morris hits a ice in his blood step back three-pointer.
Ice in his veins.
Yeah, whatever. Ice in his blood. Yeah, what's in your veins? Is it blood? Yeah, it's ice in his blood, okay.
This is terrible. This is horrible. D'Angelo Russell's rolling in his grave.
Well, maybe I didn't want to give him any credit because screw him. But anyway, the Knicks win 106-103 at home then in the next meeting between the two. And that one was punctuated by a great Frank defensive sequence on Luka. And then as I mentioned, the ice in his blood three-pointer. Marcus Morris stepping back, canning the three. ultimately put the Knicks up by a margin of, I think it was 104 to 101 at that point. And then the Knicks win by a final margin of 106-103 after Frank hits some free throws down the stretch. So these two games, I can't think of any two games that got me more excited this season. Obviously, because Porzingis was back playing against the Knicks. It also, I think what adds to the allure of these two is that they were played so close to one another. And I think each team only had one, maybe two games in between of each of them. And so it just sort of made it almost feel like they were back-to-back games. Like, I remember when the Knicks played the first game and they won, all I could think about was the next game, the next week. And I didn't really care about the rest of the games that week because I just was looking forward to seeing them play Dallas again. And they managed to take both games. Like, if David Fizdale could have just coached against the Mavericks.
3-1. 3-1 against the Mavericks career.
Yeah.
As the Knicks head coach.
If he could have just coached against the Mavericks, maybe the Knicks would be, you know, maybe we'd be fretting that the Knicks aren't allowed to pursue an NBA championship as the two seed in the East. Thing.
I like that even in our dream fantasy, we can't be the one seed.
No, not quite that good. Not quite that good. Still a two seed, but, you know, pretty solid. You know, might make an ECF appearance, hopefully, with David Fizdale having just gone, 60-22 against the Mavericks.
Very, very happy that he didn't coach well against anybody else.
Yeah, so that we ultimately got saved from the Fizdale experience. But, Schwinn, take it away. What were, you know, I mean, we were at the meetup for the one game. I remember that was electric. Watching that in person with a bunch of people, not at the Garden, but getting to watch it on the big screens there. The first game, I don't know, I was in my living room for that one. I'm sure you were too, but that was a fantastic game as well. I mean, what are your memories of these two?
My memories are...
How hazy is your memory from the second one?
Oh, you know, I've rewatched that game a few times, so okay. But I mean, my memory of the first one is just that, like, Frank, that was like a fucking, that was his best game as a pro. I know he had the 2010 game, but there's no comparison. I think that game, I mean, so like the thing with these two games is I don't care what anybody says. Like, yes, the Mavericks are a better team than us, obviously. This season and all that shit, but like those two games were as close to playoff atmosphere, like from the crowd to the players on the court and everything about them, like the attention from the media and all of that shit. It was like a playoff setting for both those games. So like the stakes felt way higher than just like, you know, a game in November, right? So yeah, I mean, that first game was like, it was, the Knicks actually led for a majority of that game. But there were various points where they fell behind, and like, I think Frank had probably his best sequence as a pro where so the Knicks are down 3, Dallas gets a steal. Hardaway's out on the break. He goes up for a layup. Frank comes in from behind and gets one of those like LeBron chase down blocks, essentially. Pins it against the glass. Zoe collects it because Zoe was actually still playing then. Collects the ball, brings it up, and in completely uncharacteristic fashion, sees that Frank is open as he's trailing for him, passes it. Frank drills the 3, ties it up. Next possession, Frank hits like this fucking step back 20 footer to give us the lead. And we basically held the lead, I think, from then through the end of the game. The Knicks missed like 6 million free throws in this game somehow that would have sealed it. So like to add more drama. But yeah, I mean, he had so many sequences in this game where he just like, I think the stats over two games, like Luka really did nothing when Frank was the one actually defending him. But because we were employing our patented, pretty stupid switch everything at all times, no matter what strategy, Frank unfortunately did not defend him constantly, and Luka was still able to put up 30-point triple-doubles and shit like that. But yeah, that was like I mean, the first game, Mitch didn't even play the first game either. That's another thing that was ridiculous. Like, yeah, Mitchell Robinson did not play the first game, so we had zero rim protection at all. And RJ had a bad game. That was like his first bad game, I think. So that was
probably the biggest downside was that RJ didn't really show out in either game. Although he did have a pretty, he had a couple somewhat big buckets in the second game late, but like neither game did he put together a really good effort, like all in all. But it was definitely great for Frank. I mean, that first one where he, it was the first game, correct? Like, I always mix up the two in my head because there's so many good moments. But it was the first one where Frank, like put Luka in jail and stole the ball from him, right? Like late in the game.
No. That was the second. That was the one at the Garden. That was the second one.
That was the second one. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. But he also played great defense. Like, I remember people. I remember the same thing you do, that people looked at that first game and Luka had like a 38-point triple double. And everybody was like, oh my God, he killed. Like, what do you mean, Frank? All you had to do was look at the numbers.
Who's that one fucking guy, Josh Eberly?
Yeah.
He's a fucking idiot, by the way. But anyway, that guy.
Big fan of this podcast.
Yeah, well,
no, I'm kidding.
I'm sorry. But so there was like a possession late in that game. Maybe it was the second game. I don't remember. But like, the Knicks are up. They were up three, right? So it's like all you want to do there is not foul Luka, right? Like, you know, or not give up a three, rather. That's all you want to do. You want to not give up a three and then not foul him when he's driving. So like in one of those sequences, Luka gets the ball, like Frank runs him off the line and then is trailing him, but like not super aggressive about trying to get back into him, and like Luka gets an easy layup. And I remember he clipped this play after the game and was just like, not such great defense from an elite defender here. I'm like, dude, you're a fucking loser. Like, that's really your thing after this game. But like, the other thing about these games, and this is what made it so satisfying to win both of them, and like, I don't care how petty that is, but the most satisfying part was like, before these games, there was this weird thing going on with like the like a lot of national NBA guys and some local guy and some of the local beat guys were like, they were like pushing this, and they're like, oh, Knicks fans actually shouldn't be mad at Porzingis for demanding a trade out because, you know, they were doing him wrong, and like that he's just looking out for the best for his career. If anything, they should boo the Knicks. And it's like, are you fucking stupid? Like, do you, like, you write about sports, competitive sports, you deal with fans, and you think that you, this is, this reasoning is like, yeah, like there were people that were like, literally, I remember who, I think it was, what's his name, your boy Christian Loosefield, he tweeted something like, I hope the Knicks, like, I hope Porzingis just like kills the Knicks at the game before, but when they were, because they were booing him at the Garden, right, like before the game, during pregame and all that shit. And I'm just like, what do you expect fans, like, you, yeah, they're gonna praise him, they're gonna like, you know, whatever, we can sit here and debate the specifics of what happened, but essentially at some point we can at least all say that like Porzingis was very okay with getting traded out of New York. He wasn't exactly like kicking and screaming to stay. Okay, so like, you know, and this is a guy that you got to remember, like, Knicks fans had this guy on a pedestal for like before he got traded. Like, he, what was that thing, that video that came out where like they put, like, it was with John Leguizamo and they had him as like in like basically like a Christ figure in the church they were praying to. You know, like like, this is the kind of shit that Knicks fans were like, you know, not like, you know, they were talking about this guy like he's Patrick Ewing, like the next Patrick Ewing. He's gonna bring the franchise back to relevance. He is like the chosen one, and like, people are like getting into Twitter beefs of like, he's better than Jokic, like, you guys don't get it, like, me included, like, you know, like like we're so to like expect Knicks fans, and like again, this is not like, this is not just like shit stirrers like Berman, or love you Berman, or like Bundy or any of these other guys. Okay, like, this is not like the local beat shit, which is annoying, but you can get. So like when Frank Isola says it, we're just like, okay, like, we get it. That's your thing. it was like they're like a bunch of national guys and just observers that are saying this stuff, and it's like, you know, I get it, I get what you're saying, but like also that's just not how sports work, and for you to even expect that is stupid. It's like the people that were like mad that OKC fans were booing Kevin Durant, like, what do we, like, this is sports, okay? Like, and I'm sorry that you don't understand that. So like, just the fact that people really were trying to push this narrative that like Knicks fans should be not booing Porzingis, he should actually be applauding him and giving him like a good reception. Like, no, fuck you. And I'm happy that I'm happy he got a shitty reception. I'm happy that they were fuck Porzingis chants that were audible during that game. And I'm happy that he's never gonna get like he's always gonna get a shitty reception in New York, as it should be. That's how it should be, because sports are about hate. And like, you need to hate your enemies.
That's a great sentence.
Sports is about hate. You hate your enemies, and you fucking hate people like Kristaps. Not like a human level. I mean, there are questionable things that you might hate about him, but like, you don't hate him on the human level. You hate him because fucking sports are like tribal, and you're not supposed to like be reasonable about your fucking enemies. Like, we don't need to be objective about everything. Fuck being objective. Fuck Porzingis. Like, it was great. It's a wonderful two games. I'm happy it had all the hate in my heart was able to get out, and it was great. Like, after the game, we went to the bar, and I remember seeing Terry, because Terry, I think, he had gone to the game from NYK. Terry, he had gone to the game. I remember seeing him, and like we hugged like he was like my long lost brother. Like, I hadn't seen this guy in fucking 15 years because the Knicks won their third game of the season. Like, you know, like that's what that shit's about. You know, it's okay to just celebrate your like little meaningless victories that empty out all the hate in your heart. And that's what that game was. It was wonderful. I loved it. I'll always love it. I don't care how stupid and meaningless that game was.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm with it on both. Going back, there were a couple of things I forgot about both games. I mean, the first game, I guess you guys implied it with the Fizdale stuff, but the Knicks were 1-7 and the Mavs were 5-2. And it just both of them sort of felt like just the number of college football games I've watched in my life, or college basketball games, but more so in football, where like one team is just way worse, but it's a rivalry game and they get up and like the student section just going crazy. And then something goes wrong for the favorite team early in the game, and you can just kind of feel like, oh, wait, this isn't going to be easy. And I love just that sense in both games, and especially that the first one was in Dallas, and then Dallas to like get revenge in the second one had to go into New York, where it would just be like this vitriolic storm towards their team. Like, it was just a beautiful buildup, and just narratively, I mean, to what you were saying, Schwinn, like I really, really enjoyed that in a season where the Knicks were rarely competitive and largely pretty bad, and a lot of what happened to them was objectively not that interesting if you're not ingrained in it like the three of us are, and I guess some of our listeners are. This was great to like feel like you had stakes, and that's really what these games did. Like, I remember this was a play where Lucas scored, but Frank just harassing him up and down the court early in the first quarter of the first game. Mm-hmm. It felt like March Madness, right? It felt like an NCAA tournament game where just like the scrappy guard from like Morehead State is like harassing like Kyrie Irving or something like that. That's really what it felt like. Not to make that comparison, because Frank's a lot better than that, but it was that feel. And I was like, and if you're watching as a Knicks fan, you're like, all right, like, you guys know, like, I'm someone who defends Porzingis, but I was just like, let's fucking go. In that moment, that was so, so great. Even someone like Bobby Portis, who could have been dead half the time this year, like, he was giving a shit. Like, there was a play where Knox had his shot deflected off the backboard, and Portis just sprinting out of nowhere, catches it, jams it in one motion. Marcus Morris had this dirty step back over KP that was just like, all right, like, let's play ball. We got our new KP. He's only going to be here for half a year, but he'll be great.
And it even was like nice. It actually was nice, like, at the Garden that game. Both games, it was actually nice that Porzingis played well in both those games.
Yeah.
Because it made it that much sweeter, because you were like, you played well and Marcus Morris still beat your ass, so fuck you. Like, that was enjoyable. And also, like, the most, even like, what was great after that was like, after the game, there were people like Howard the Beck, who was like, he had some like tweet where he's like, oh yeah, like, and I saw it where they're like, oh yeah, Knicks fans can like celebrate their championship now. And it's like, yeah, dude, I am going to celebrate my championship now because fuck you. Like, I don't need to – like, I know the Knicks weren't going to be good this year, so you're goddamn right. I'm going to celebrate this sweet – because you know if they had lost the game, you knew exactly – like, you knew what these guys were like. They had been, like, waiting all summer for these two games. Like, oh, man, like, we got all these takes that we're going to get out once the Mavericks pack up the Knicks. Like, it's going to be great. You know they had, like – they probably have, like – 30 tweets saved in their drafts.
I was literally about to say, how many drafts do you think got deleted of Knicks tweets about, like, Knicks versus Mavericks that have probably been written since, like, July?
Since, like, last – since, like, they traded him. Since, like, last January. Since then, they've had those tweets saved up. Guaranteed. They're probably still in the drafts because they'll just drop them. Whenever inevitably Porzingis eventually wins a game against the Knicks, like, they'll drop them. They'll drop them then. When he has, like, a hot November, they'll drop them then. Because they were already coming out when he had that hot month before he tailed off predictably in March. Like, when he had a really good February, right? He was really hot in February. So a lot of those tweets were popping up. You know, oh, this guy looks like an MVP player. I was like, yeah, I remember that. I remember the month every year he was good for that. Love that. Love that month.
Yeah, and I think also part of what made that first game great was to your point earlier, Alex, like, Luka, 38 points, he was just bombing step back threes. It almost, I mean, to I guess this is just because it's in my head because I was just watching the Last Dance, but it felt like Jordan going against the Celtics a little bit, not to compare Luka to Jordan, and more importantly, not to compare the Knicks to, like, one of the greatest teams in NBA history. Celtics. Yeah, in the 1986 Celtics, but it felt like that, and, like, this one guy just, like, there was no way the Knicks were stopping him. Like, they, even with as well as, I mean, I guess Frank had moments where he locked him up, but in that first game, like, it just felt like Luka was just the one guy they didn't have an answer to, and they still won the game. And this was a play I forgot. Taj having that and one put back dunk in the final minute to seal it. That was great. Far and away the best moment of his year. And then in the second game, the big thing I forgot in that one was Dennis Smith Jr. He was playing well. He had 13, 8, and 6, and time again. And this is literally, Alex, we spent so much time talking about this throughout the year. This is what I wanted out of the guy the entire season, all of last year too. Just the ability to win off the dribble, draw a double team, and then find a way to hit the open man under the basket. And he kept doing that. He had this one play that was, even though it was probably a carry, but it's simultaneously his play of the year, where he kind of faked a pass, and he just brought the ball so high, like it was up to his shoulder, and he got within an inch of palming it, and both Luka and Seth Curry literally jumped at it, because it seemed like he was going to pass, and then he brought it down. It was like a Harlem Globetrotters-esque move, got right by both of them, and then hit a lob to Mitchell Robinson for a slam. Boban on the other end was kicking ass. Any game Boban's involved in, I totally love. This is the play I think you were talking about earlier, Alex, where RJ had a reverse spin move and just totally lost Luka. Like, Luka gave up. Like, he didn't even chase. And just big righty finish. Again, I kind of enjoyed the aspect of Luka, like, just in moments, because he might be my favorite single player in the NBA, like, beating the Knicks' ass. Like, he had this ball fake on a right corner three where Mitchell Robinson, like, basically, like, karate kidded him and ended up kicking him in the shoulder. And then Luka took one dribble and just put in a righty push shot from 20 feet out. It's the kind of shot that, like, I really think he's the only guy in the NBA who makes shots like that. Just ridiculous touch. And then the two plays down the stretch that won it for the Knicks. Morris's epic step back three with 13 seconds left. Luka gets a layup on the other end. And then Frank, I think even more than the fact that he made the free throws, the Knicks had to call timeout because they couldn't inbound it. And then the Mavericks doubled Frank, and he had – it was kind of like Antonio Brown-esque, like this little double move just to get open to get the ball, gets fouled, sinks both free throws. Knicks win it. I'm totally with you guys. Absolutely the highlight of this mostly bad Knicks season.
Yeah, did we also touch – I'm disappointed that you got into DSJ before I could, since that's my boy. But this was definitely DSJ's.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Schwinn just hung up, by the way. We lost it.
At this point in the season, when that DSJ game happened, I was like, oh, my God, I'm right. I'm vindicated. He can be a good player. Oh, my God. But it was a fantastic game for him.
Is that his only good game of the season?
It was probably, like, the only one that you could really call a good game. Yeah.
So, like, what – like, it was – I think he – it was his first game back from an injury, too, I think.
It was his first one back from his stepmother.
Oh, right, right. And then – and Mitch had – he was out with an injury. That's why he had missed the game before.
Yeah, Mitch got a concussion from when whoever it was, like, elbowed him in the head.
Drummond.
Yeah. and, like, Mitch was, like, game-time decision for that second game and then managed to make it in and actually made a difference.
He was, like, 17 and 12, I think, in that game. He had a huge game.
Yeah, he was. He was big. And the other thing, just one other, like, memory that stuck out to me was the – there was one in each game, and I forget which one came in which. I think it was the first game – I'm pretty sure it was the first game Frank blocked Porzingis and they called it a foul. And then the second game, Frank tried to posterize Porzingis and got fouled and didn't have it called. And it was like two of what could have been like just two of the most satisfying moments ever as a Knicks fan to have Frank block KP and then posterize him. And both got taken away by bad officiating. And, if I recall, I'm trying to remember. I don't think they challenged either. I know Fizdale was, like, really really stingy with the challenges at first. And he started using them a little more as the season went on, or as his part of the season went on. That fortunately, was very short. But he didn't use the challenge on either, if I remember right. And he definitely could have won the one where Frank blocked him. The other one... was a little closer to call, but it seemed like Frank definitely got fouled. But that was two moments that got sort of lost in time that if either of them had been allowed to stand, would have been fantastic moments, I think. But I feel pretty comfortable wrapping the show up. We've gone super long. It's probably a two-part episode now, if we're being real. Schwinn, where can everybody find you? Are there any nifty things you're working on? Anything for the PNT show you want to tell people about or anything like that?
We're doing a pod. We're recording on a podcast tomorrow with your boy, James Marcita, your predecessor. So we'll probably just talk about fucking the Knicks.
Wow,
maybe.
Really?
Hiring Tibbs. Yeah, the Knicks. Knicks may be hiring Tibbs, and it seems that they've hired, they're finalizing a deal to hire Brock Aller to add to their front office. So probably talk about that. Did a podcast over the weekend that was pretty completely unrelated to the Knicks. It was good though, just a conversation about evaluating scorers and scoring across eras and you know, different ways of doing that, which was pretty fun. Yeah, that's it. Other than that, you can just follow me at Chwinnypoo, and that's about it.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on with us, and we were thinking about maybe doing a mailbag, but I think this is going to be a two-parter now. So we have part two, we'll have these two running. And then considering this is going to now run on Thursday, tomorrow, keep an eye out for the third part of our interview with Harvey Ayrton of the New York Times and formerly the Post, Daily News, and author of When the Garden Was Eden for part three of our conversation about the 70 and 73 Knicks championship teams. But till next time, peace out, and we'll talk to you all soon.